संन्यासेषां निसन्यास सन्यास न्यास मीन्स सेटिंग असाइड यू सेट असाइड इज कॉल्ड संन्यास वेन एक्शन इज सेट असाइड इज संन्यास A sannyasi is one who sets aside everything. Action, relationship, responsibilities, everything. That is called renunciation. In sacrifice, you put yourself as a kind of an oblation. In every sacrifice, there is a receiver of sacrifice. Sacrifice has three elements. The sacrificer, the process of sacrifice, and the receiver of the sacrifice. There is an object to whom you sacrifice. In renunciation, you simply set aside. In a sacrifice, whatever you are doing, whatever you are offering to an object.
Sure.
You offer it to either to X or Y or Z.
It's always to a greater, something greater.
It may not be all greater. Sometimes many people sacrifice things for lower things. But there is always an offering to something. When a man becomes subject to some great passion, a desire, he doesn't offer himself to something very great. The object of desire may be much lower than himself. When a person becomes very greedy and wants to eat a lot, he offers himself to the food, which is much lower than himself. Or he offers himself to one who can prepare food for him. And prays to that one, prepare food for me. He makes all kinds of offerings to the person who prepares food for him. But there is always in a sacrifice, there is an object to whom sacrifice is done. Now Sri Krishna's answer is that you should sacrifice not to the gods, because they only can satisfy your desires. And if your purpose is only to satisfy desires, all right, you can do it. But you should sacrifice yourself to the Supreme Lord. Because then you become His instrument. And you become free. Therefore the idea of sacrifice is a much greater idea. You offer yourself to the Supreme Lord. And then action is performed even while you become free from action. In sannyasa, you just give up all action. So renunciation. Denounce everything.
Static.
Static.
Swadharma
is the law of action proceeding from your sabhava. Take for example, my own sabhava. Is to proceed on the lines of knowledge. If somebody says, do this, normally, my swadharma will be, I will not obey immediately. There are people who simply are told, do this, they will do. There are some people, you tell them, do this, he will consider whether any great benefit will come out of it or not. There are others who will ask, is it right for me to do, wrong for me to do, and accordingly I will. There are some who will try to understand the whole world and then see what is the place of this action and see whether in that whole world that action has a meaning, then I will do it. So depending upon your natural inclination, is determined your dharma. my basic nature is a Brahmanic nature, my personal nature is a Brahmanic nature. So if anything is to be done, I always take time to consider whether it is the part of the totality of knowledge in which what is the place for it. So, my Swadharma is to take time. It does not matter if I take time in deciding whether I should do or not. Although, once it is known, then the action will be very rapid. That will be also part of Dharma. It takes time at length. For example, India is supposed to be slow. If you ask the Swadharma of India, it is a Brahmanic nature. You know, England is not a Dharma, it is a commercial, it is a Vaishya nature. But India has a Brahmanic nature. So if anything is given to India from outside, it takes a long time to understand what has come and reacts to it very slowly and then undergoes a great process of churning to understand quite thoroughly what is being thrown. Once you find that India finds it out, there is rapid. When Western civilization came to India, it was like that. To absorb, first of all, it took a long time for India to absorb. And then suddenly it produced a Sri Aurobindo. Huge mountain of knowledge, which combined both East and West in one embrace. So that is the Swadharma of India. From outside people might think that India is very slow. Many children also are condemned, oh, this child is very slow. But you don't understand that that child may be actually absorbing like a good Brahmin. Gradually he tries to understand, and if you disturb him and give lot of work at that time, it will be a very dangerous thing. Many people pump the children. Do this, do this, do this, do this. Where the child is taking his own time to understand. And we are not patient enough. We do not move according to his dharma. So dharma is the law of development determined in each case according to his swabhava. Yeah?
But another one, sir, parityaje also means transcending the swabhava.
Yes, all that. Everything. You, there is only one law, then it is the divine law, that's all.
I wanted to ask about sattva and how much of the divine thing is intermingled in the sattva. I think you asked.
I forgot.
She was saying that there is a movement from tamas to rajas and rajas to sattva. Now, sattva is to be transcended, no doubt, sooner or later. But she says that still the divine's will, there is still a lot of intermingling in the sattva level. Is there or is there not? Or
is there
the infiltration is
there. Infiltration is constant at every level, even in tamas.
Even in tamas,
sattva. Even in rajas, even in sattva.
It's not only in sattva.
Equally or more so in
sattva. No, it depends upon all elements put together. In each case, it may be different.
Does it depend on how receptive you are to it? On your openness or what element is it? Not dependent.
It depends upon, first of all, the circumstance in which you are born. The kind of body that is given to you by circumstances. The action that you have done in the past, where you have reached in your evolution. And thirdly, what is your present effort? And then, how much near you are the divine. So it all depends. So many factors are, so you cannot mathematically determine and say this is how it is. But you have to see quite a lot within yourself. And see how much is in you, what is tamasic, what is rajasic, what is sattvic, what is your real swabhava. And how much is manifested in the observed nature. So we have done the first four chapters, and I thought it's time that we once again revise these four chapters, because these four chapters are very important. And you can enter into the Bhagavad Gita when you have proper grounding in these first four chapters. So even if there is some repetition, it is good to have some kind of repetition, but to be sure on the ground. The first chapter is more or less a description of the Kurukshetra, which has its own significance. And it describes the two armies setting themselves against each other and the preparations of the war by the sounding of the conch shell from different parts. And then the entry of Arjuna and is asking Shri Krishna to put him in a position from where he can view the armies. And then suddenly he gets sensational emotional attack. And the important part of the first chapter is the argument he puts forward for withdrawing, sitting down on his chariot, throwing down his Gandiva. We have sufficiently discussed the argument which he advances. In brief, just to repeat once again, the argument is, how can I kill? This was not the question when all the time there has been a preparation. The preparation was for killing, because war meant killing. But this argument comes up in a very sharp way. Separately, we shall discuss this question of killing. And there we shall make a distinction between the principle of destruction in the world and a human being in the act of killing. The place of killing in human life is justification, if at all. And this question has become very important in the present age, in the age in which the Mahabharata war was planned, whether human beings should kill each other was not such a great issue as it is now. And that is now how, when we read today, the question assumes different proportions. But even in the time of Arjuna, when he raises the question, it means that this question was sufficiently prominent. And that a theory of inaction was also quite prominent. Because the upshot of the argument of Arjuna was, I shall not fight. The implication was that renunciation is far more justified than action, and that too action of this kind in which massacre had to take place. That he should kill as a matter of duty for setting injustice to its destructive end was known to him. He had come to fight because of that dharma. But now suddenly the question of Asaka becomes prominent. And then, apart from the question of dharma of killing and adharma of killing, there was already this conflict. And this is further reinforced, this conflict, by the argument that even if killing is undertaken, the result will be the kshaya, the destruction of pura dharma. There will be vast massacre and thousands of young soldiers will be killed, and the women will therefore go astray, and the entire fabric of dharma will vanish. So, if I fight for the sake of dharma, even if I incur a dharma of killing, the result will be a vast scale of the destruction of dharma. This is a triangular argument. Therefore, suddenly there is a recourse to the theory that inaction, renunciation is far superior and therefore is set down. This is the basic point in the first chapter. So there are three issues. First is the issue of dharma, by which is inspired to come to the battlefield, in which killing is a part of dharma. Because in the time in which Mahabharata was being fought, it was the creed of the Aryan fighter that every Aryan fighter has both a right and a duty to prevent injustice, to establish justice, and for that purpose, even if killing is necessary, killing is a part of dharma. Secondly, suddenly Arjuna feels that killing is wrong. And we shall see in the second chapter when he enunciates further the same argument. We shall read again the second chapter, the argument of Arjuna. How can I kill Bhishma? How can I kill Drona? And even if I win, how shall I enjoy the blood-splattered enjoyment? This is the adharma. How can this adharma be done? And then Arjuna asks that even if for the sake of justice I have to fight, ultimately there will be vast-scale destruction. And there will be a complete destruction of dharma itself. As I said, later on we shall have a full session on the question of killing, the principle of killing, and the whole argument about the place of destruction in the world. And unless we discuss this question in depth, we won't get the true thread of the argument of the Gita. Now, in the second chapter, we have to see how Sri Krishna deals with this situation, the sovereignty and the mastery of Sri Krishna while dealing this question, in which he penetrates into the threads of the argument of Arjuna thoroughly and masterfully. So let us see how the very first words of Sri Krishna, this is second chapter number 2. Saritaji, you can sit here. Second chapter, the first with the second verse. Even if you don't have the book, I shall read quite slowly so that you can read it properly. O Arjuna, how did you develop this kind of rejection during the crisis of war? Now you can see the whole summary of whatever Arjuna has said. Sri Krishna does not argue. He simply says why this mood of rejection has overcome you. He doesn't discuss dharma, adharma or any kind of deeper questions. The whole point is dejection. She says, you are being overpowered by this dejection. So according to Sri Krishna, all his arguments are fundamentally expressions not of a philosophic mind, but of a mood of rejection. Sometimes we argue because our arguments are valid and intellectually very sound. But sometimes you know that we are arguing because we are troubled. We have received a blow somewhere and then we are reacting vitally, emotionally as a result of emotion. So, Sri Krishna's answer, the first reaction of Sri Krishna is, all that you are talking is nothing but a state of rejection. And how can a warrior, the hero warrior, the hero of the war, how can he be overpowered by rejection? It is not followed by great persons, does not lead to heaven, and it is disgraceful. This is the basic answer that Sri Krishna gives, in which Sri Krishna actually rebukes. It's a kind of a rebuke. That is called the mastery of the man. Sri Krishna is a sovereign lord who knows the psychology and the arguments and the truth so thoroughly that he sums up in 2 lines the real answer that has to be given to Arjuna. You are a hero and therefore you should not be overpowered by sentiments and emotions. That means Sri Krishna does not give value to the arguments that are being made. He knows that these arguments are basically arguments of rejection. And rejection is disgraceful to the hero, to the warrior. So this is the basic point that Sri Krishna makes in answer to all the arguments that Arjuna has given. And then he says, O son of Partha, 3rd verse, do not yield to cowardice. Now this is a much worse rebuke than the first, when a hero of heroes is told that he has succumbed to cowardice. Klebyam mas maggamaha. This is klebyam, is a terrible rebuke that you have succumbed yourself to cowardice. This does not behove you, O destroyer of the enemies. Give up this feebleness of the mind. Stand up and fight. This is the sum and substance of Sri Krishna's devastating answer. There is no argument at all here. What is dharma, adharma, nothing. In the exposition of the Gita, it is very important to see the action of a teacher, of a master, who uses varieties of means of filling the student or the pupil with the necessary strength, strength of character, strength of heroism, strength of knowledge, and strength of argumentation when necessary. But the first thing that was necessary was that in sum and substance, there is nothing but cowardice in the arguments. They are not arguments, they are only state of cowardice. I want to run away from you. I cannot bear this. And therefore, the only argument that Sri Krishna makes is not an argument, it's simply exhortation. And the sum and substance is fight. Stand up and fight. The entire emphasis is upon action. Fight. This whole tendency to withdraw and to go away. There is only one smashing point, you fight. So all that is the end of the Bhagavad Gita's teaching is told in the very first answer, first outburst of Sri Krishna. Afterwards, 18 chapters are only arguments and the exposition, but ultimately the message of the Gita is simply this: do not become a coward. Do not be overpowered by rejection. Do not become disgraceful. Stand up and fight. This is all sum and substance. In the very first two sentences, you can see also the mastery of Vyasa, the author of the whole Mahabharata. What a craft of his exposition. Now Arjuna reiterates his arguments. And now let us see this argument once again, which is already given the first chapter. But now there is a reiteration of the argument. O Madhusudana, tell me, how shall I attack with arrows the most venerable Krishna, the grandfather, the Guru Dronacharya in the battlefields? How shall I attack? This is a new argument in his own business as a result of the desire to run away. Because all these years they've been preparing for the war. It's not as if for the first time he's thinking. He knew that they will stand before him in the war. But now this argument has come up, seized him rather powerfully. And he says, how shall I attack the arrows? With arrows, the most venerable Krishna. Katham Bhishmam Aham Sankhe Dronam Cha Madhusudana Ishu Bihi Pratiyotsyami Pujaha Harisudana. They are actually Pujaha, those are worthy of worship. O Shri Krishna, how can I Ishu Bihi by arrows? Pratiyotsyami, how shall I wound them? How shall I blow them with arrows? Then he continues, it is better to live in this world by begging rather than killing the most venerable elders. Even if I kill these elders for worldly gains, all your enjoyments will be smeared with blood. You can see three arguments in this state. There is already a tradition of begging by sannyas. And sannyas is the path of inaction. So he says it is better to live by begging rather than to live a life of action in which I have to kill. So there is an argument against action. It is a repetition of this which Arjuna has already said when he started his argument in the first chapter. Nakankshe rajyam, nakankshe sukham. I do not wish to have kingdom. I do not wish to have happiness. It is an echoing of the whole argument, that is, in action, what do action for? Enjoyment of possessions and enjoyment of happiness. Therefore, the argument for renunciation is already granted, is involved. And this is repeated by saying, it is better to live in this world by begging rather than killing the most venerable elders. Now he says, even if it is my dharma, and even if I kill these elders for worldly gain, this is the word for worldly gain, that is, now he doesn't say it is killing for the sake of justice, but it is as if, even if I fight, it will be only for worldly gains in hell fight. It is for enjoyment I'll fight. She said, even if I kill these elders for worldly gains, all my enjoyments will be smeared with their blood. This massacre is something that is wrong. It is adharma. So, then he continues with the argument. We are not sure who is stronger amongst us. And who will win the war? Moreover, the sons of Dhritarashtra are arrayed against us, after killing whom we ourselves would not like to live any longer. It is an argument of blood relationship. It is a repetition of the earlier argument that enjoyment is enjoyment when we can share it with the people of our own, atmajanaha. But now he has a mission which he had not done in the first chapter. I am confused about my duty and owing to my low spirits, because Sri Krishna has already blown his heart that all your arguments are nothing but rejection. So he now admits, I am confused about my duty. Actually, the word duty is a very wrong word. About dharma is a higher term. So he says, dharma sammudha cheta. He says, I am absolutely confused about dharma. What is dharma? What is adharma? I am confused about my duty. And owing to my low spirits, I have lost my grain. Therefore, this he had not done in the first chapter. Now he says, therefore, I ask you to tell me what is certainly the best for me. I am your disciple. I have taken refuge in you. Please do instruct. This is the saving grace, that he has now turned to the teacher. Yat shreyaha syat nishchitam bruhi tatme shishyaha te aham shadhimam tvam prapanna. Yat shreya, what is the best? Nishchitam bruhi, that you tell me nishchitam, with definiteness. Shishyaha te aham, I am your pupil. Shadhimam, rule me. Tvam prapanna, I am here surrendered to you. Now this in brief is the argument that he has presented. Even if I were to attain undisputed sovereignty over the whole world and conquer even the gods, I do not see how I could remedy this grief which is consuming my senses. Evam muktva, having said this, Rishikesham gudakeshaha param tapah na yotse iti govinda muktva yushvim bahuvah. Having said this to Rishikesha, Shri Krishna, Buddhakesha is Arjuna. Arjuna, param tapah, he spoke these words to Rishikesha and then finally said, na yotsi, I will not fight. Iti govinda muktva tushnim, tushnim is quiet, tushnim babuvah, he became quiet and silent. Now, since now Arjuna wants a reply, the first gong of the reply is very important. It is as if we are shattering the basic argument on which he bases himself. What is this argument? Ashochyan anvashochahatvam pragyavadamscha patase katasun agatasunscha na anushochanti panditaha. What you should not worry about, you are worried about. What you should worry about, you are not worried about. And you are speaking the words of the wise. You are taking recourse to the language na kaṅkṣe rājyam, na kaṅkṣe sukham. And ultimately your argument boils down to this, that I will not enjoy after blood splattering. Therefore, whether it does this or not, it is for kaṅkṣe sukham. Because it will give him pain afterwards, therefore I don't want to do it. This contradiction is involved in the argument. He uses the word of the wise, but really, the wise think otherwise. Those who speak of renunciation, if you had really to speak the language of renunciation, you should have gone to the basic premise of renunciation. Why should you renounce? On what basis should you renounce? Those who renounce, Sri Krishna says there is justification of renunciation. The whole theory of inaction, as Sri Krishna will explain later on, is not wrong. Inaction is a path, and the path can be achieved. And having gone on that path, certainly one can get rid of grief. But that is not the only path. There is another path also. But even if you want to take the path of renunciation, I would have said, fine, wonderful. But there are no signs in your state of consciousness, no sign in your argument which show that you are aware of the basic premise of renunciation. Why should you renounce? You want to renounce because you want to give up action. Fine. But what is the basis of renunciation of action? The basis is that there is an inactive reality. And you want to achieve the inactive reality. And for that purpose, I want to renounce. If you have to make this statement in the very beginning, that it may be my dharma, adharma, anything, but I have suddenly realized that reality is inactive. And I want to achieve the supreme reality which is inactive. It will be very fine. That will be the real pandita who says, I have discovered the reality is inactive and I want to go into the state of inaction. And therefore all action, whether right, wrong, everything, is to be renounced. He doesn't speak all these arguments that you have given. If I kill, this will happen. If I don't kill, this will happen. This is not the language of the one who knows the reality or speaks on the basis of a reality. Therefore, Sri Krishna now, he says that if you had really had your real premise, you would have said that there is a reality which is inactive and which is indestructible. Start with that statement, that there is a reality which is inactive but which is indestructible. And if this is the only reality, and if that reality is indestructible, there is a question of healing and not healing. If reality is something that cannot be killed, what are you talking about? Killing Drona or killing Bhishma? Keep your premise first. Reality is inactive and indestructible. That is what wise say. Those who renounce the world, they want to attain to what? To that which is never killed, which is indestructible. This is a dong that he gives. That is to say, if you examine the argument of Arjuna, he has not referred for one moment to the ultimate reality. In his question, there is only the question of dharma, adharma, Bhishma, Drona, brothers, enjoyment, and whether I shall have real enjoyment or not. But the one thing on which his whole argument of not doing, not fighting, is in one sentence, I do not wish to have happiness, I do not wish to have the kingdom. And behind that statement, there is hidden one premise, that you want to renounce. Renounce for what? For attaining inactive reality. But that inactive reality is indestructible. And if you really say that that reality is indestructible, your whole language of killing and not killing does not arise. So, Sri Krishna now introduces into the whole argument the real premise, on the basis of which Arjuna's argument may be somewhat valid, but then the conclusion will not be valid. If reality is indestructible, then even if you destroy Drona and Bhishma, that reality remains indestructible. So where is the question of destroying anything? It is indestructible. So on this basis, this is the first dong of the argument. It is as if crossing through all the ideas of killing, not killing, enjoyment, dharma, adharma, straight there is an arrow going of Sri Krishna's argument and opens up a vision of a reality which is transcendental and which is indestructible. So, he lifts up the whole argument, he introduces in the whole argument what may be called thought. He introduces the conception of thought, and that is a concept which is the subject matter of the whole of the Gita. You cannot resolve problems of man without bringing into man God. As long as you try to avoid God and try to go round and round, the human problems cannot be resolved. And this is what Arjuna was doing. In his argument, there is no reference to God at all. You can see the whole argument. So now Sri Krishna introduces the idea of God. It's not an argument of dharma or adharma. He introduces the concept of God. And if you read the whole of the Gita, it is nothing but the discussion on what is God. And God in His entirety, God in His inactive, indestructible aspect, God in His mobile and dynamic aspect, God in His omnipresence, God in man, God in creatures, God as an avatar, God specially manifested in vibhutis, and God in all His aspects of creation and maintenance and destruction. God as a destroyer, God having his own design and relationship between God and man, and the necessity of man to rise to that consciousness so that he becomes that vision of God himself. And then, seeing the root of action, so that the action of God is directly allowed to manifest in the world. This is the real argument of Sri Krishna. In which, therefore, the question of dharma, adharma, all these are subsidiary questions. It is only by lifting yourself up to the concept of God and saying there is nothing else than God in the world. Therefore, all that counts in the world is God's design, and God is omnipotent and full of mercy. There is complete compassion, is Satchidananda, delight. In His will there is no destruction, there is no cruelty, there is nothing but compassion. And you have to be the instrument of that consciousness and see that God and see what He is doing. And you simply have to be so irresistible to that will. You don't need to act either dharma, adharma, nothing. Just allow that action to pass through you, and that is all. And that is the real answer to your question. All the 18 chapters are given, therefore, to the perception of God. And how to achieve that perception of God, that is the whole burden of the Gita. But this is the first dong, as I said. He lifts up the whole argument by saying that you are going round and round. See, first of all, the basis even of your argument. If you want to have inaction, inaction can be justified only on the ground that you want to attain to the reality which is inactive. But that reality is indestructible, and that is the only reality. Therefore, the conclusion is that there is nothing which is destroyed, and your whole argument is on destruction. This is the contradiction that on which Sri Krishna first of all shakes the argument of Arjuna. And then, of course, he will go further. So let us go quickly over this argument and see the description of the indestructible reality. So he says, never did I not exist, nor did you, nor these things, nor shall we ever cease to exist in the future. So where is the question of destruction? Just as an embodied soul attains childhood, youth and old age to the body, so it attains another body after death. Wise man does not dream at this, because the reality is indestructible. O son of Kunti, the objects that are perceived by the senses give rise to pleasure and pain, to heat and cold. They are transient. Therefore, O Bharata, endure them heroically. You want to achieve the inactive and indestructible reality. These are only transitory things. Bear them and attain to the indestructible reality. O the best among men, anyone who is balanced in pleasure and pain, and who is not agitated by the senses and their contact with objects, only such a wise person is fit to attain liberation. Now the word liberation comes here for the first time in the Bhagavad Gita, and that is very important. Saha amritatvaya kalpate. You attain to immortality or indestructibility or to liberation. Now what is this point? Why is this the answer to what question? Arjuna says that I am on the 10th verse of this chapter, if you refer again to page number 62. O Bharata, Rishikesh smiling spoke these words to grief-stricken Arjuna. Grief-stricken. He was now stricken with grief. Even if he had to do this or that, what was troubling Arjuna was the grief. He wanted to do something, nishchitam, in which whatever he does, there should be no grief at all. So Sri Krishna says that there is a state in which there is no grief at all. That comes about only when you know the reality which is indestructible. This is the basic statement of the Bhagavad Gita, that you can be free from all grief only if you attain to a reality which is amrita, which is indestructible. This is the concept of moksha, which is starting point. The whole of the Gita, we shall come back again and again to this concept of moksha. There is no existence for the unreal, and the real never ceases to be. Nāsato vidyate bhāvo, nā bhāvo vidyate satah, ubhayoho api, drishtah antastva nayoho tattva darshivihi. There is no existence for the unreal, and the real never ceases to be. Thus the knowers of reality have ascertained the nature of what is real and what is unreal. Now, Sri Krishna again elucidates the nature of this indestructible reality. That alone by which all this is pervaded is imperishable. This imperishable is not something over there. All that is pervading this world, everything in the world, all that alone by which all this is pervaded is imperishable. Because no one can destroy that immutable reality. O Bharata, that indestructible reality is imperishable, immeasurable. But the bodies which are inhabited by the self are perishable. Therefore, prepare to fight. You want imperishable, and imperishable will never be destroyed, and you are afraid that you are going to destroy. Fight, destroy, reality will remain indestructible. This is all that you are caring for. You want indestructibility. Fight, destroy, destroy. These bodies are going to be destroyed in any case. If not today, tomorrow, they are transient. You are caring for the indestructible, fine. Be sure it will not be destroyed. You are not going to destroy anybody, anything. Really, that is to be the reality. Those who consider the self as the killer and those who think that it is killed, both are ignorant. For the self neither kills nor is killed. Yaha enam vetti hantaram, yaha cha enam manyate hatam, ubhau tau na vijanito, na ayam hanti, na hanyate. Ayam na hanti, he does not kill, na hanyate, he is not killed either. The self is never born, nor does it ever die. Having once born before, will it not be born in the future? The self is unborn, eternal, imperishable, and ageless. Though the body is slain, the self is not killed. O son of Pritha, if one knows that the self is indestructible, immutable, unborn, eternal, how can a person kill anyone or cause anyone to be killed? Just as a person discards all clothes to put on the new ones, in the same way the embodied self, having discarded the worn-out bodies, goes into new ones. This is one of the most famous sentences of the Bhagavad Gita. Vasamsi jirnani yatha vihaya navani grahnati naroparani tatha sharirani vihaya jirnani anyani samyati navani dehi. Just as the old clothes are discarded by man and wears the new ones, even so the old bodies are given up and the soul, which is indestructible, wears the new bodies. And then comes the famous two verses where the imperishable is described. Na enam chindati shastrani, na enam dahati pavakaha, na cha enam kledayati apaha, na shoshayati marutaha, achedyaha ayam adahiyaha, akvedyaha ashoshyaha evacha, vityaha sarvatataha sthanuhu acharaha ayam sanatana. The weapons cannot cut the self. The fire cannot burn it. The water cannot drench it. Nor can the wind dry it. The self is eternal, all-pervading, immutable, stable and everlasting. Therefore, it cannot be cut or burned or drenched or dried up. The self is said to be unmanifest, unimaginable and unchangeable. Therefore, knowing this to be so, you should not grieve. The grief is because you feel the destruction. But if reality is indestructible, which can never be killed, then you should be free from grief. Whole argument is not yet expounded. There is only emphasis upon one aspect. O mighty armed Arjuna, even if you think that the self is born due to the birth of the body and consider it dead due to the death of the body, you have no reason to grieve. If you think that there is no indestructible reality at all, that there is only the movement in which birth takes place followed by death and another birth takes place. If this is your argument, then also you should not worry. Because what is born will die, and then there is again another birth. So, on that ground also you should not grieve. This is the nature of the world. Death is certain for the one who is born, and birth is certain for one who dies. For this inevitable fact, you should not grieve. O Bharata, all created beings are unmanifest in the beginning, manifest in the middle, and unmanifest again after their death. So what need is there for limitation? This is one of the very powerful arguments. We human beings are in the middle. We do not know what is before, we do not know what is hereafter. We are caught in the manifest. Before manifestation, there is unmanifestation. After the manifestation, there is unmanifestation. And therefore, we do not know the beginning or the end. We are only caught in the middle, and all our arguments are on in the middle path. So, Sri Krishna says, all your problems, all the grief arises, because we do not go to the root. Your arguments are because you have not gone to the root of the matter. In your arguments, there is no place for the indestructible. Ashcharyavat pashyati kaschit enam, ashcharyavat vadati tataiva janyah, ashcharyavat cha enam anyah shrunoti, shrutva api enam veda na cheva kaschit. Some see him as wonderful. Some speak of him as wonderful. Some hear of him
even after hearing, one does not know what is that wonderful. That which is in the beginning and that which is in the end. That is really the wonderful. And you have not yet spoken of Him, you have not known Him. Unless you know Him, how can you come out of the grief? Some look upon this self as a wonder. Some talk about Him as a wonder. And some hear Him about Him as a wonder. And yet having heard of Him, some are able to understand at all. O Bharata, the eternal self that dwells in the bodies of all beings, cannot be slain. Therefore you should not grieve for any living being. Now this is the end of one argument by lifting Arjuna to a perception of the indestructible. In other words, in the entire argument, a new element is introduced by Sri Krishna that changes the whole complexion of the situation. And yet, it is only in one aspect that God is still brought into the picture. In His aspect of the immobile, indestructible reality. The connection between that indestructible and the destructible is not yet brought out. Accepting that that reality pervades all that is here. This is all that He has been given so far. Later on we shall have a greater knowledge of that reality. And as we go to the greater knowledge, the greater and greater is the clarity and the nearer to the solution. But in the meantime, having argued this, Sri Krishna comes as it were on the earth, having reached the indestructible, knowing that Arjuna is lifted up suddenly to a new perception, which he cannot bear immediately. He is still on the earth. So he comes back again on the earth and speaks a language which is appropriate to a warrior who has come to war with certain ideas and refers to those ideas. So now, 31 starts a new argument. Swadharmam api cha avekshya na vikampitum arhasi dharmyadhi yuddhat shreha anyat kshatriyasya na vidyate. Arjuna is a man in the battlefield. Arjuna belongs to the clan of Kshatriya. And Kshatriyas are ruled by a certain dharma. Therefore, Sri Krishna brings him to a statement which is known to Arjuna. But, while he has been lifted up, and since Arjuna is not able to lift up himself to that perception, and still he is on the earth here, he reminds him that you are Kshatriya. For a Kshatriya to get this kind of war is regarded as a boon. And therefore, in the Kshatriya, you have to see what is your dharma. And having seen your dharma, even by seeing the dharma, I have shown you what is indestructible. And seeing the indestructible, you should not grieve about destruction. But even from the point of view of your dharma, this kind of war which has come to you is a war which comes to Kshatriyas as a boon. And in that war you must fight and do your dharma. O son of Pritha, fortunate are the Kshatriyas who come upon such opportunity as this great weapon which has come to you of his own accord. There is an open gate to heaven. This is also a kind of an answer to Arjuna. Arjuna was saying that if I kill, I will be destroying the dharma. And one who goes to destroy the dharma, he says, iti shushrunama. We have heard, they only go to hell. As against that, Sri Krishna says, that such a war comes to you, to Kshatriyas only rare war. And if you fight, be assured, you might have heard you go to hell, but you know that very well, that the real truth is, that when you fight, according to your dharma, there is only one consequence of it, namely heaven. This is contrasting what he has heard and what Sri Krishna has heard. Because he says, we have heard that if you create a dharma, then you will go to hell. Now Sri Krishna says that you are only going to fight according to your swadharma. And if you do so, you will only go to heaven. If, however, you do not fight this righteous battle, now he says the consequence, supposing you now withdraw from your fight, what will happen? Because you have been seeing the consequences all the time, results of my action, whether my result will be right or wrong, it will produce dharma or adharma, it will produce hell or heaven. This is what you are considering, isn't it? Alright, now consider, if you fight, you will go to heaven, but supposing you don't fight, what will happen to you? If, however, you do not fight this righteous battle, you will be deprived of both your own beauty, swadharma, and your fame. And then you will certainly incur sin. Asa chet, jetvam imam, dharmyam sangramam nakarishyasi, tataha swadharmam kirtim cha hitva papam avapsyasi. The sin will come then, if you do not fight. Remember, these arguments are on the plane on which Arjuna is arguing. This is not Sri Krishna's final arguments. But he equates those arguments with these arguments. That if you believe in doing the right action, for gaining the right fruits of action, then this is what you will get. Your consequences are not implied. The consequences that I speak are the real consequences that will happen. People will speak of your infamy down through the ages. For a respectable person, evil fame is worse than the death. The great chariot warrior will think that you have turned away from this battle out of fear. Those who highly esteem you will thus look down upon you. Your enemies will speak unkind words against you. They will doubt your heroism. What will be more painful than this? Now you can see that this interlude of the argument is quite different from the earlier argument where Sri Krishna was speaking of the indestructible reality. He had introduced a new premise. But like a good teacher who moves between different planes, seeing the mood of the student or the pupil, he lifted Arjuna on a high plane, but finds that he is still here. He is still worried about his arguments, about actions and the consequences. So he argues on that plane. This is the interlude in the argument. In the Bhagavad Gita, what is very important is you see the thread of the argument. And this thread is not a straight thread. It is very important that the Gita's teaching is in a winding manner. That is because it's a living experience in which the mind of the pupil runs on different planes, and you have to lift up ultimately the individual from lifting from one plane to the other, sometimes going up and sometimes going down. The teacher also ondulates with the pupil's consciousness and then ultimately fixes him up. First 6 chapters you will find this great winding movement. Afterward you will find straightforward arguments, and this is a very important point to be noted with regard to the composition of the Gita's argument. You will suddenly find shifts in the argument, because Arjuna is not yet fixed, he is overwhelmed, he is in a state of dejection. He has put forth some arguments which he has heard, about which himself is not sure. He is in a state of confusion. He is moving from one plane to the other. And even when Sri Krishna lifts him up on the basic argument of reality, once again, seeing that Arjuna is still here, he comes down and argues on the plane on which his argument is based. But now, this is another shift in the argument from 39. This was only interviewed between the first part of the argument and now the new argument that starts. This was only the interviewed. So Sri Krishna says, I have told you of Buddhi Yoga. That is to say, when I spoke to you of the indestructible reality, that indestructible reality can be seen only by Buddhi. Buddhi which is clear and pure, not Buddhi which is confused and in a state of rejection. Therefore, and you are speaking the language of the pure Buddhi, when you said, I do not wish to have Sukha, I do not wish to have Rajya. You are speaking the language of the wise. But that language of the wise is appropriate to those who are doing the Buddhi Yoga. And in the Buddhi Yoga, I showed you what is truth, the indestructible reality. And seeing that indestructible reality, you have no ground to grieve for death and birth. And you have grieved about it. But that is one part of the argument. If you really want to withdraw from this battle, on the clear understanding that you want to attain to the indestructible reality, then that is certainly a right thing to do. But be clear that you are going out of this war for death, not because of the question of dharma, adharma and the consequences. On that ground, if you are leaving, then you are not on the right premises. Now Sri Krishna says, that is the path by which you withdraw and go to the indestructible reality. But by the same Buddha Yoga, I will tell you that even if you act, you will be free from grief. That is a path of going out of the grief if you go to the indestructible reality by withdrawal. But now I shall tell you another aspect of the truth. That even if you act, you will be free from grief. And that is the starting point of the real teaching of the Gita. Because ultimately, Sri Krishna's teaching is that you should act. That even if it is possible to come out of action, he says, it is not to be preferred. Sri Krishna's final answer in the whole of the Gita is, that although you can come out of the grief by attaining to the inactive, indestructible reality, that is not preferable. What is preferable is to find a solution where there will be no grief even when you act. And this is the new argument now from 39 it starts. Esha te abhihita sankhe buddhir yoge tu imam shunu. Buddhya yuktaha yaya partha karma bandham prahasyasi. O son of Pritha, this is the wisdom of the Sankhya which I have given you. Now listen to the wisdom of yoga, endowed with which you will be free from the bondage of karma. And then he says that I am giving you that path. Even small effort in that path delivers you from fear. In this endeavor, no effort is ever rendered void and no obstacle ever prevails. Even a small measure of this dharma, righteousness, protects a person from a great fear of the world cycle. Now he expounds this new path, so that even if you are in action, you will not have peace. Mukta. From here to the end is one argument. Basically, there are again certain sub-paths in the argument, but basically from here to the end is a one straight argument. And the whole burden of the argument is that if you can make your buddhi sthira, then even if you act, but if your buddhi is sthira, then there will be no grief. Whatever action, yeah, there is no question of dharma or adharma, whatever action, but if you can keep your buddhi sthira. In other words, if you become equal-minded under every circumstance, if you see oneness everywhere, then whatever action you do, you will be free, there will be no grief. This is the secret. Combine two elements, perception of oneness and keeping the equilibrium, complete equality, samatva, and act. And that is better than not acting. Act, but with these two propositions put forward. Now this perception of oneness and maintenance of equality are interdependent. You cannot have real equality unless you have the perception of oneness. This perception of oneness is connected with the earlier proposition of the indestructible. Oneness is indestructible. That perception of equal of oneness is the basis of equality, of samatva. So action which is based upon the perception of equality, the perception of oneness and the maintenance of equality, if you do this, if you achieve this, then there will be no grief. He was grief-stricken and he wanted to come out of the grief. So Sri Krishna answers immediately that if you want no grief at all, then attain to the perception that there is indestructible reality which is one. As a result of which everything is equal, if you can keep equal in your consciousness and act, then there will be no grief in your consciousness. What is the cause of the grief? The cause of the grief is unsteadiness of buddhi. If buddhi becomes fixed, steady, on oneness, on equality, then there is no grief. All grief is because of unsteadiness. The first sentence of this itself is very important. Vyavasayatmika buddhihi eka iha guru nandana. Vyavasayatmika, the buddhi which is vyavasayatmika, which is concentrated. The buddhi which is concentrated is eka. It is simply one. There is no duality. Bahushakha hi anantascha buddhaya avyavasayina. But those who are unsteady, they have multiple branches. There is nothing but grief. Even if you have pleasure now, there is nothing, it is a wildness or wilderness or a forest or a foliage in which there is plethora where grief will be constantly pursuing you. So this is the basic point of Buddhi Yoga applied to action. Let the Buddhi be concentrated. Now, having given this basic proposition, the argument takes a turn immediately. Because whenever you speak of karma, there is the ordinary notion of karma, particularly in the time when Arjuna was facing this problem. Whenever anybody spoke of karma, people understood karma in a certain context. Therefore, Sri Krishna refers to that psychology because he immediately senses a good teacher is that he does not need to be told as to what is going on in the mind of the pupil. He looks at him or he feels automatically as to what is happening in the mind of the pupil and answers to the question of the unasked questions. So he has spoken of karma. And he understands immediately, although I have said very clearly, that having seen oneness and if you can keep equality, steadiness of your intellect, then you will be free from grief. But immediately, the word karma implies for Arjuna what is called Vedic karma. In the time in which this teaching is given, by karma was meant the Vedic karma. Therefore, immediately the argument shifts to that. Many people who do not understand the thread of the argument of Sri Krishna, they feel jerks in the argument. And that is because it is not realized that Sri Krishna stands in the battlefield as a teacher, not as an expounder of a theory. If you are giving an argument in a class of philosophy, argument would be straight. But if you are arguing in a field of action, then you should constantly measure up and see how the pupil's mind is working. And then you become wavy, undulating. You move your argument according to the turns of the mind of the pupil. So the moment he speaks of karma, Sri Krishna realizes that Arjuna is thinking of Vedic karma. And Vedic karma is meant for what? At that time, the theory of Vedic karma is that you should desire and you should get results by actions appropriate to desires. And for that, you should do the Vedic karma. Vedic karmas are prescribed works. Not all the karmas, but prescribed works. So now Sri Krishna takes up this question. He says, O son of Pritha, unwise men speak flowery words and are supposed to be followers of the Vedas and are devoted to the various futile activities for devotion to heavenly planets, saying that apart from the ritualistic sacrifice, there is nothing else. The moment karma is spoken of, the idea that is given is ritualistic sacrifice. And Sri Krishna says, I am not going to tell you of the ritualistic sacrifice. I am going to talk to you about all karma, sarva karmani. And I am not speaking to you of the karmas which are undertaken for the sake of desire and for the sake of the fruits of action. And people say that Vedas are connected with karmas and there can be no karma without desire and there can be no karma without enjoyment of fruits of action. This is all that you have heard and people speak in the name of the Veda. Indulge in desires, considering heaven the highest goal, they engage themselves in karmas only for the sake of prosperity and enjoyment. Thus they create a karmic basis for future embodiments. That is not the way of coming out of the grief. I am not going to expound to you this theory. My theory is not this. I am speaking to you of karma. But I am speaking to you of karma which will be freeing you from grief. But this is not the path. So he distinguishes it from that. Attached to sense enjoyment and material opulence, with intellect deprived of discriminative power, they are bewildered by such things and are unable to develop that one-pointed intellect which leads to samadhi, the super consciousness. Sri Krishna says that so long as you are engaged in that kind of action, you can't have buddhi yoga. Buddhi cannot be concentrated. It will not be vyavasayatmika buddhi. It will be avyavasayatmaka. It will be that which is not engaged. This is flitting, like a butterfly going from one place to the other. It can't be steady. So this is the path of Vedic karma as known at that time. Not Vedic karma is understood by the Vedic Rishis earlier. Now, therefore, Sri Krishna says that this Veda has understood is, O Arjuna, karma portion of the Vedas deal only with the three gunas. Therefore, you become transcendental to these three gunas. Be free from all duality. Abide in the eternal sattva, and having established yourself in the self, rise above yoga. These three gunas are the fields of fleeting experiences. The three gunas can never remain stable. They are constantly fluctuating. So long as your intellect is fixed in these three gunas, your intellect can never become stable. Therefore, rise above the three gunas. Establish an indestructible reality, of which I have spoken earlier, and act. For the knower of Brahman, the karma portion of the Vedas serve the same purpose as a small reservoir of water in a place where there is a flood from all sides. Once you know, by steady will, steady buddhi, that reality, and there is flood everywhere. In that flood, what is the value of a small well of water? So whatever you get by karma, which is motivated by desire, will give you that water, but that water will be like a water of the well. A well, which to the Brahmavadin, is located in a flood of water. Because he possesses the flood of water. So what is the point of having this small well of water which the Vedic karma full of desire gives you? Therefore, come out of that karma. Having denounced this is the argument to dispel from Arjuna's mind that when he speaks of karma, he does not speak of Vedic karma which is motivated.